I will open the Rules Committee for June 3rd, 2009. Senate Bill 897 will not be heard today and is carried over. And I'm going to go farther down the agenda to SB 628. This will be a public hearing today only on SB 628. So I will open a public hearing on SB 628. Senator Bonamici, will you come forward, and will the committee administrator give a brief overview?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 628A establishes foreclosure mediation program and specifies procedures for mediation, delineates contents of required first and second notices of foreclosure sale and right to mediation, and procedure if grantor fails to resolve notice, accepts from certain notice requirements, property secured by the mortgage that the government agency holds for loan, funded through the government program, grants Department of Consumer Business Services certain rulemaking authority, sunsets provisions related to mediation on January 2nd, 2014, declares emergency effective upon passage. We have the Dash A8 amendments, and I will let the senator speak to those.
Thank you,
Senator Devlin and committee. Thank you so much for holding this public hearing on Senate Bill 628 today. I'm Suzanne Bonamici. I represent Senate District 17, which is in Washington and Multnomah counties. Chair Devlin and committee, we had several hearings in the Senate Consumer Protection and Public Affairs Committee this session about foreclosure in general and about Senate Bill 628. We started out and have always had the goal, Mr. Chair and committee, of preventing foreclosures, reducing preventable foreclosures. The bill established originally a mandatory foreclosure mediation program that was modeled after similar programs in other states. And you may know, Mr. Chair and committee, that states have taken various approaches. Virginia, for example, passed a foreclosure moratorium. Other states have had mediation programs. We have always understood that not every foreclosure can be prevented. But we did hear through testimony that an important part in the foreclosure prevention tool box is a meeting between the borrower and the lender. In fact, the Department of Consumer and Business Services worked with many groups recently and had a community event in Portland recently where they had several lenders there and hundreds of borrowers came, and it was a very successful event because it gave the borrowers an opportunity to talk with their lenders about how they could modify their loans or otherwise avoid foreclosure. Well, the problems that we heard in the Senate Consumer Protection Committee, Chair Devlin and committee, was that many consumers have had debt difficulty contacting their lender, finding someone with the authority to modify their loan. They've had we heard testimony about people who have had their calls transferred, just an inability to get in touch with anyone and have that conversation about whether they could save their home by modifying their loan. So the issues we identified included how we could have a procedure to get the party together, who we would have organize this and mediate. After the bill moved to your committee, Chair, we had a work group that was formed. We met several times, and we have continued to have conversations as recently as this afternoon, and we did receive the Dash A8 amendment within the last hour, Mr. Chair, but we've had an opportunity to talk about its contents. It does use the notice that we enacted in 2008 as part of House Bill 3630, which is a notice that goes out to people who are facing foreclosure. We've modified that notice to include the possibility of modification and to provide information to consumers about how they can contact their lender. In that notice, we've added a provision that states that the borrower, the consumer, may request modification. They will have a modification request form that they need to return to their lender within 30 days. If the modification request form is returned, then the lender must review that and process that request in good faith. If the borrower requests a meeting, then the lender must meet either in person or by telephone. The person who meets with the borrower must have the authority or be able to obtain the authority to modify the loan. So, Chair Devlin and committee, that's a very important step, that meeting, that if the borrower requests a meeting, the lender has to process that in good faith and have that meeting with the borrower. Then at the conclusion of that process, the trustee will file an affidavit. If the loan cannot be modified, and we understand, as I explained, that not every loan will be able to be modified, but having the conversation is critical, the trustee will file an affidavit explaining how there has been compliance with the Act. And it's my understanding, based on conversations this afternoon, that some of the detail that's in the Dash A8 amendment needs to be changed to make sure that we have the ability to address any situation that might arise. And the industry is going to clarify that it's going to be more than just we complied with the loan. They will actually be explaining how, or excuse me, complied with the Act. They will be explaining how they complied with the Act. Another important part of this conversation, Mr. Chair and Committee, is that the Department of Justice has in account some funds that they received from the settlement of the Countrywide case, and they have been willing to use those funds to help get, fund additional housing counselors throughout the state through nonprofit organizations. That, Mr. Chair, we believe will be an important part of this process because additional housing counselors will be able to help guide consumers through this process. So overall, Mr. Chair, there have been many compromises along the way in this process. We still believe this is a very important bill for these difficult economic times. As you know, foreclosure affects not only the families living in the home, but also their neighborhoods as well. I do encourage you to send this bill to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. As I explained, we did just receive the Dash A8 amendment. There are some technical issues. We're trying to make sure that this is going to actually work for the industry. We've been talking with them. I believe that we've made so many compromises that we're close to being able to say that there are only small things we need to address. One of the things is we are looking for a way to make sure that we can monitor whether the program is working, so we're trying to figure out how the best way is for us to do that. But I'm happy to answer any questions. I do plan to continue later today and tomorrow to make sure that these small issues are resolved. I believe there are other people here who will testify a bit about how foreclosure is affecting them and how it is a critical bill for these important times, and I'm happy to answer your questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any questions for Senator Bonamici?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I just want to say I served on the committee that Senator Bonamici chairs, and I just want to commend her for her work on this and sticking with it and developing a compromise that's workable for all parties. So keep up the good work. I hope we get a final.
Thank you, Chair Devlin and Senator Burdick. No other questions?
Any more?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. I'm going to go to the first three parties. I'm going to ask people to limit testimony to no more than 3 minutes each. We have a lot of people here to testify on this bill and other bills, so I'm trying to get through everybody that's here today and all the bills that are before us that will both have hearings or move today. So Ken Bean, Angela Martin, and Dodie Howard. Can we actually use the timer? Please proceed. Identify yourself for the record. And
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, thank you very much. Angela Martin with Our Oregon. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate Bill 628. Senate Bill 628 provides a fix to one of the biggest, if not the biggest, obstacle facing struggling homeowners, simply getting their lender on the phone to negotiate a way to save their home. Whether it's the family that's struggling due to unemployment and simply needs a temporary fix, or someone facing a exploding interest rate and needs a longer-term fix, simply being able to talk and negotiate with their lender can really make the difference. I've sacrificed several trees in order to bring you extensive data and information, which should be coming around momentarily. You'll see on the charts that I provided, they were prepared by the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco. Pages 5 and 6 give you some really detailed information on the fact that loan modifications simply aren't happening at the level we need them to be addressing this problem. Again, that's pages 5 and 6. We see that in the last quarter of 2008, there were nearly 18,000 seriously delinquent loans in Oregon. More than 4,500 foreclosure filings and just above 2,000 loan modifications. In an article that appeared in today's New York Times, and I also included in your packet, it was reported that modifications on Alt-A and subprime loans actually fell by 11% from May over April. So we see that the pace is dropping, and it wasn't what it needed to be to begin with. The stakes on this are extremely high, not only for struggling homeowners and families, but for the state's struggling economy. It's no secret that the foreclosure crisis has devastated families in every corner of our state. And again, I have included some graphs that break down by the region. We also see that this is the impact, again, is picking up pace. Another graph that I include in your packet from Mortgage Bankers Association data that's supplied to us on a quarterly basis, we see that foreclosure filings or foreclosure starts on a daily basis are now averaging 64 in the state of Oregon. That's up from a low of 12 per day in the middle of 2006. In addition to the people represented in these graphs, we know that this crisis is having a devastating impact on our neighboring homeowners who suffer a decline in property value every time foreclosure occurs, and it's having a serious impact on our state and local revenue. Estimates are that $2.5 billion would be drained from state and local property taxes, due to foreclosures. That's just one reason that our state economist testified that another wave of foreclosures could seriously hinder Oregon's ability to recover from this current economic crisis. The process and the method by which a homeowner ultimately loses their property and shelter is almost exclusively controlled by the state. Historically, states have decided how a homeowner may lose a home to foreclosure and what process a mortgage holder must follow before seizing their property. This presents us with a tremendous opportunity to assess how rules guiding the process can be amended even temporarily, as Senate Bill 628 proposes. I won't go into the details because fortunately Senator Bonamici covered those for us. I will end by saying that this is a very important piece of legislation that we hope will earn your support. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Please proceed.
Thank you for just giving us some time to let you know how we see this thing unfolding. Well, I want to thank you, Chair Senator Devlin, my senator. My name is Ken Bean, and I'm a licensed realtor. I've been for 20 years, and I do an awful lot of work with folks that are trying to do short sales and foreclosures. I hold the certified distressed property expert, and so I see these folks a lot. And although we're getting foreclosure notices in all price ranges, the folks that I feel are getting the most impacted by this are really, you know, the average wage earners. And why I say that is because in trying to contact the lenders, it's often that the conversation, or to try to get somebody that you're actually having a conversation with, someone that can make a decision, it often takes over 40 minutes. You're often dropped calls in between that. And I have to do those calls with the bank all the time. And I do that where I'm set aside trying to make these calls. And, you know, how is the wage earner supposed to do this at work? I mean, they just can't. You know, they might be able to go make a phone call, but they can't be on hold for 45 minutes. And, you know, so there's just, in talking to a lot of these folks that are really upside down, they wouldn't have to be upside down if they had a way to have a face-to-face with their lender, explain their situation, and tell them what they can do. I just feel that there really needs to be a mechanism to do this. The foreclosures sure are hurting, property values in many neighborhoods where there's, many foreclosures. It wouldn't take much to look at that in Happy Valley and see what's happening out there. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Senator Devlin, my Senator Metzger, and all of the members of this Rules Committee for hearing my story. My home is at it's 881 Southeast Lambert in Portland, and me and my husband have been there for over 20 years. A few years ago, we were forced to refinance and take a second mortgage with Citibank in order to pay off some bills and keep the dump trucking business going. Current economic downturn, we were forced to close the business. There's no trucking. Small trucking business that was main source of income for me and my husband. We now rely on my working income and my husband's Social Security, which has... I need to put my glasses on. Which we've had hard times in the past, and we've always made it through the winter and stuff, but this time it didn't happen. The economy dropped, and we had to sell our business, and we're trying to sell our equipment, but nobody's got any money. So we would like, I've been trying to seek a modification on my loan through Citibank. I have talked to them starting last September, and I've called and reached a representative half of the time. Each time I've spoken with a different representative, I ask for their ID number, and they give me their name and ID, but will not allow me to return phone calls to them, so I'm talking to someone different every time. And a few months ago, they told me I was in foreclosure, and then I called back and explained I wanted to apply for the loan modification and explained I believed I was eligible under the new federal guidelines. The loss mitigation department then assured me I was not in foreclosure, I'd been placed in loss mitigation, but would tell me no more. Every time I've called, inquiring on where my mortgage stands and where I am in loan modification process, I wasn't giving any modification, other updue financial statement or whatever, and then someone would call me back. Last phone conversation I had with the loss mitigation department was in the mid-April. I was told a caseworker would contact me in 30 days. I was given no name, a phone number. They would not give me a phone number to call. I have not heard from them. It should be pointed out, City Mortgage has indicated publicly that it will participate in the new federal Making Home Affordable Plan. However, yet it is indicate to me and many other homeowners how we apply, and that I stated before, is near impossible to communicate directly with them. And then when I get someone on the phone, they don't tell me anything. They just, it's a stall. 628 would give me the right to meet directly with my lender and negotiate a loan modification. It isn't that we don't want to pay. We're not destitute. I just want a loan modification. Please, on behalf of my family and thousands of Oregon families, give us a chance, one meeting, to work directly with our lenders. I fear that my home and thousands more will be frivolously lost if we pass this opportunity. So please pass SB 628. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions for the witnesses? Seeing none, thank you all for coming here today. I'm going to go a little bit out of order here. Paul Cosgrove and Pam Levitt, and then I will come back to the next two people.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paul Cosgrove representing Oregon Financial Services Association, and Pam Levitt and I are hearing on behalf of the United Financial Lobby. We have been working with Senator Bonamici and others to try to see if we can reach agreement on provisions in this bill that will attack the problem that we all face. Yes, it's always going to be better to have lenders talking to borrowers at times when loans are in default or in distress. And it sometimes works both ways. National data continues to show that up to 50% of lenders are unable to contact their borrowers. Data also shows some borrowers having difficulty contacting their lenders. So what we're trying to do is put together a process that will facilitate that communication and hopefully resolve as many problems as possible. We've reached agreement in principle on what the elements of that process are. As Senator Bonamici said, it will be the kind of notice and an opportunity to get together that she described. There are details that need to be worked out. We're working diligently to do that. The details make a big difference in that without the details being done right at the end of this foreclosure process, if a modification is not successful, we need to make it sure that we can ensure clear title to the eventual purchaser of the property. So we're working on those details, and we hope to have an agreed product to you very, very shortly. We did have a very productive meeting again today, and we appreciate, Senator Devlin, your assistance and the assistance of your staff in facilitating those discussions, and also Senator Burdick when she was working in the prior committee on those. So thank you very much. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Ms. Levin.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, Pam Levitt with the Credit Union Association of Oregon. You have my written testimony. I also gave you an example of a brochure that our members are using on the mortgage modification process and foreclosure prevention plan. I just want to concur with Paul that I believe that we only have a few remaining minor issues that we are going to work out this bill in the next few days, and I just want to thank you for your leadership and certainly Senator Bonamici, and be happy to answer any questions also.
Any questions? Appreciate that your work on this bill also. I would tell you that if you could come to agreement by 5 o'clock tomorrow, it would be preferable. At the latest, I need you to come to agreement by Friday because I'm either going to post the bill back for work session Friday afternoon or Monday.
Mr. Chairman, I would hope we could do 5 o'clock today, actually. I think we're all working to try to resolve this as quickly as possible, but I appreciate the comment. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Matt Wallace and Ms. Sybil Hebb. Please proceed.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, Sybil Hebb with the Oregon Law Center here today in support of Senate Bill 628, and I want to just echo the great thanks to and appreciation of the efforts of the members as well as industry and advocates coming together to address this issue. The Law Center, as you know, provides free legal assistance to low-income people across the state of Oregon. We're seeing an increase in calls related to mortgage and foreclosure crises, and frequently we hear just a common theme in our clients' stories is that they have tried repeatedly to try to engage in and reach someone to engage in a look at whether or not they qualify for a loan modification. Often, in our experience, when we've determined that people do in fact have income and would in fact be eligible for a loan modification. And so the basic concept is, you know, we think this bill will help people avoid having to find an attorney in order to actually engage in a discussion about a loan modification. Often when we're involved, we're able to get parties together. We do find that people are entitled to or eligible for a loan modification. That helps families, it also helps neighborhoods, and it helps lenders maintain a stream of income in the property and avoid the foreclosure process. So we think it's beneficial all around. Appreciate the reasonable approach proposed by the bill, and think this will help people take advantage of opportunities to avoid this crisis. So thank you very much.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, for the record, Matt Wallace, consumer advocate with OSPIRG. Again, want to thank you for the opportunity to testify and support Senate Bill 628, and also want to echo the thanks to the chair and other members of the work group and parties that have come together to really craft a proposal that'll get at the heart of the problem. I don't want to spit a whole lot of statistics at you, but I did want to emphasize a couple of things. Mr. Cosgrove mentioned that, you know, lenders often have trouble reaching borrowers, and I think he's right. One of the points that we've been emphasizing throughout this process is, frankly, there's a lot of blame to go around for the mortgage meltdown, but there's a couple of things that we hope everyone can agree on. The problem is, in fact, getting much worse here in Oregon, and that we have an opportunity and should take action to do something to solve that problem, stop the bleeding both for homeowners facing foreclosure, for their neighbors who are facing huge hits to their home equity, and for lenders as well, who often face huge financial losses on foreclosure compared to other sort of workout options that are available. A quick update for the statistics for the first quarter of 2009 show that more than 31,000 homeowners have been seriously delinquent or in foreclosure, and that's a record level that's only been matched once since these records began being kept. Other estimates put Oregon actually in the top 10 states for foreclosures in the first quarter of 2009. It's a huge problem that we're facing here. And as bad as that problem is, of course, for families who are faced with losing their homes, it's also really hitting home for all Oregonians in the form of lost home equity, which in many cases is the biggest source of savings for Oregon families. Angela highlighted the figure of $2.5 billion in projected home value lost just due to foreclosures in the neighborhood. And that's a fairly conservative statistic, which probably should be updated based on new foreclosure estimates and projections for the next couple of years. But one thing I think that we haven't really emphasized yet is that this bill is designed to get more evaluations of loan modifications taking place and conversations between borrower and lender. And here's why that matters. Modifying troubled loans really helps all parties, but unfortunately right now, the modification programs that are happening just aren't keeping up with demand. A study of subprime and Alt-A loans and securitized pools, all that means is the exact sort of problem loan that's led to the economic crisis, loans that have been sliced and diced and sold off to investors down the line, have shown that the average loss to investors on foreclosures is about $140,000 if they actually go through the foreclosure. But if they actually do a workout option or figure out some sort of loan modification, which is what we're proposing that borrower and lender try to do here, you know, the loss is much, much less, about $19,000. So, you know, it's a win-win scenario for all parties involved. But it's also known that, unfortunately, you know, the current modification efforts just aren't reaching demand. And about 5 to 10% of struggling homeowners are actually getting the help that they need, getting the conversations and the frustrations that have been echoed by the testimony given here today, I think, really illustrate that. But there's also estimates that up to 50% of the foreclosures that are happening now could actually be avoided through a loan modification or some other workout option. So this is, in our view, a win-win scenario, win-win-win scenario for homeowners who are struggling, for lenders who are facing huge losses to foreclosures, and of course for neighboring Oregonians as well who are facing big hits to their home equity and to the economy as a whole. And with that, I'll leave my spoken comments there. Happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm going to close the public hearing. We will be bringing this back as soon as we possibly can. When it comes back for work session, it will be forwarded on to the Ways and Means Committee. That is because I don't believe it came out in the testimony. But the Attorney General has received a settlement from Countrywide, and the terms of that settlement is that they need to be used. The money needs to be used for foreclosure-related issues, and so that funding will be actually going to fund the programs in this bill. Okay. We will open a public hearing on House Bill 2228. Could the committee administrator give a brief overview, and is there anyone here to testify? Okay.
Sure.
Beth will give an overview, and also this particular bill had a hearing in the, I believe, the Environment and Natural Resources Committee, or Environment Committee in the Senate, whatever we call it this
True
year.
Chair Devlin. House Bill 2228 establishes the Oregon Transfer of Development Right Programs in the Department of Land and Conservation and Development, allows up to two pilot projects to be elected by resort site owners in sending area of Metolius Resort Site, authorizes development of small-scale recreation community in receiving area, only in conjunction with the transfer of development opportunity from sending area of Metolius, authorizes a maximum development of 282 residential units in Skyline Forest Sustainable Development Area, stipulates that actual quantity of residential units is dependent on number of acres conveyed to a land trust or state or federal agency, requires DLCD to report to Legislative Assembly on pilot program and declares an emergency effective on passage.
Okay. We have no public testimony on if you'd come forward and please identify yourself and actually limit your testimony to 3 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Devlin and members of the committee, my name is Art Slack. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. And I will be brief at this point. The Association of Oregon Counties does not support supersiding. And there are two elements within this bill at this point that provides for supersiding and not going through the local land use planning process. One of them has to do with the transfer of development transfer of development rights as it relates to the Metolius potential Metolius developments, and the second one relates to the Skyline Forest. Skyline Forest looks like a destination resort, will act like a destination resort, but it's being processed through a supersiding provisions rather than going through the local land use process. And we have not, in our review of it, have not seen, one, a justification adequate for super siting, and number two, that there's nothing within local land use authority and responsibilities would preclude this development from being processed through the county land use regulations. The last thing, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we'll continue to express some concerns with respect to the transfer development pilot programs. The more we look at the questions or the legislation, the more questions we seem to find. And if we're not able to address those, we'll have to look at those through the administrative rules, which with the Department of Land Conservation and LCDC will be looking at some time in the future. So with those, we have, shall we say, great reservations with regard to the passage of House Bill 2228. Thank you.
Okay. Is there any questions? Yes, Senator Metzger.
Mr. Slack, thank you. So you're concerned about the supersiding as opposed to going through the regular process?
That's correct.
And this 2228 is clearly linked to what is now going to be more materially 3298, which also has a different approach to the land use process. So I guess my question to you is, representing the counties, is does the Association of Oregon Counties support our current land use process? You're expressing concerns that this goes against that. We're going to be dealing with a couple of bills that detour that process, both of them, and they're somewhat linked together. What is the position of AOC on that linkage?
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, the Association of Oregon Counties has taken a position not to support House Bill 3100, and it primarily has to do with the process that was undertaken by LCDC as they looked at utilizing the provisions of the special area of critical concern, statewide critical concern, and going through a process which was constrained in terms of time and involvement. We think that at least if we're going to look at a process of identifying areas of critical statewide concern, that it should be a process that provides adequate time and involvement by stakeholders, local governments, and the public. And we don't believe that 60 days is an adequate period of time. If county was to undergo such a process, we would probably be looking at least 12 to 18 months, if not longer, to undertake that kind of detailed land use consideration. And we think the state should be held to the same standards that local government is held to.
Thank you, Mr. Slack.
Okay. Senator Farrelly, I can see it in your eyes.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know exactly what you said, but
I see a lot of questions. I see a lot of things in his eyes, and they're not always good.
I saw a question there.
There is a question, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. So when you, Mr. Slack, when you make mention of the fact that this is a process that lacks due process or thoughtful consideration of the time that's necessary to make good decisions, actually, this is just the product of centralization of a decision-making process and the disenfranchisement of the county and land use planning. What do your members tell you about that in terms of their feelings about being disenfranchised in these decisions?
Mr. Chair, Senator Farrelly, county commissioners have long subscribed to local control. That being said, they also subscribe to the statewide land use planning process as a partnership between local government and the state. And we really believe that that partnership should be one that is one that has good faith and one that realize that the partners have opportunity to have adequate dialogue and go through a process that everybody understands. So we subscribe to local control and local responsibility. We have in the statewide planning program certain responsibilities that we continue to want to have full responsibility for.
Mr. Chairman, you mentioned the word cooperation. It appears to me that if the partnership is based on disequity, that is to say, if one of the partners doesn't like the outcome and are perfectly willing to torpedo the process to change the outcome, how is that a productive partnership?
Mr. Chair, Senator Farioli, at that point, I would say that is not a productive partnership.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
As the representative of the counties, 36 counties that essentially do most of the land use planning for Oregon, as the local authority to do that, along with cities and other jurisdictions, do you think that an action like this to centralize the planning opportunities to super site will have a long-term negative effect on the willingness of local governments to cooperate in land use planning with the state?
Mr. Chair, Senator Farioli, as I indicated earlier, the Association of Oregon Counties does not support supersiting. We believe that is bad public policy and a bad policy in the state of Oregon. And, the implications that it has is one that may stress the trust level between local government and the state.
Mr. Chairman, I would say that Mr. Schlack is a master of understatement. But I appreciate his comments.
Senator Fair, anything additional? Nothing additional. I will close the public hearing.
Thank you.
Do I have a motion?
Chair?
Yes.
I seem to be somewhat confused. I thought there was an amendment.
To 228?
To 2228, yeah. I could be.
Any amendments pending? No.
Senator Burke, I think, had a question.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I saw a Senate amendment from the committee.
Oh, yeah. There was an amendment. Mm-hmm. There have been some amendments, but the amendments are not necessary for the bill to move.
They're already in, yes, okay.
No, the amendment is not necessary for the bill to move.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move House Bill 2228.
Wait a second.
Not in the work session yet.
Okay. Now, I have two parties that are sitting out here like they're going to jump up. Did you want to testify on this bill or the next bill?
Senator, we were here on 2228. We didn't understand there was a hearing. We thought it was just a work session, so we didn't sign up.
Okay. Could you come forward, and can you limit your testimony to 3 minutes?
Certainly.
I will reopen the public hearing, even though I didn't quite get it closed.
Chairman Devlin, Senators, thank you, and we'll make this very brief. My name is Brad Chalfon. I'm the Executive Director of the Deschutes Land Trust in Bend, Oregon. With me, Linda Swearingen, who is representing Fidelity National Timber, the landowner of Skyline Forest. Also with me is Eric Kanzler of Central Oregon Land Watch. This has been a rather remarkable journey where we've brought together opposing interests to create what we hope will be a model for keeping commercial timberlands in production intact. We've worked with the House, and we've generated remarkable support in our local communities. All told, this should, we hope, conserve roughly 100 square miles of Central Oregon forest land. We simply wanted to go on the record with you and make sure you understood how important this is for Central Oregon. And if you have any questions of us, we'd be happy to.
The other parties would like to identify themselves and say a few words. That's fine, actually.
Linda Swearingen, and I represent Fidelity National. We would like to say that we have turned in amendments to legal counsel through Representative Clem and Richard Whitman that we all agree on that are not reflected in the Ingroves version. So we just wanted to put that on the record there. Some of them are minor in nature. Some of them just have to do with the legal description, and some need to be addressed, if not now, at a later time.
Okay. And the other part.
And for the record, I'm Eric Kanzler, Executive Director of Central Oregon Land Watch, and I think my friends here have said it all.
Okay. For the record, my understanding is with Representative Clem that he has talked to Legislative Council and has talked to a number of the parties, and they believe they can proceed without the amendments, and the amendments are of such a technical nature that they're not necessary. He basically wants the bill to move, is basically.
Thank you. So.
Thanks.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I
yes.
see Representative Clem in the audience. Yes.
Okay. Representative Clem, would you like to come forward and explain? I still haven't closed the public hearing, so please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Brian Clem, State Representative from District 21 and Chair of the House Ag Committee that brought you House Bill 2228. We were working on getting another couple Scrivener's changes, but we talked out in the hall. You have the fiscal. All the parties support the being engrossed, and it's not critical to change the few remaining parts. This project is too important. And I heard the sign-a-die resolution got sent to committee over here today, so I'm a little nervous.
Did it yesterday?
Oh, shit.
So,
Mr. Chair, question.
Yes.
Why wouldn't we just do it right?
If you've seen the rest of the agenda that I have and the number of bills that actually still need to move to the House.
This is a bill. I mean, if we're going to end up in court over a Scrivener's error, we should probably get it right.
Representative Clem, would you like to respond?
Mr. Chair, Senator Atkinson, all three parties support the being gross. There won't be any lawsuits over these issues. We've got an agreement with all the parties involved.
And I will close the public hearing.
Those three.
Can I ask a question, Representative Clem?
Yes.
Representative,
are we still in public hearing, Mr. Chair?
Okay, I'll reopen the public hearing. I've been trying to close it for about 5 minutes now, but...
Representative Clem, I have a question. I have some familiarity with the Skyline, working on that a couple of years ago, with the idea of being able to provide for sustainable forestry, and that's very, very important. Support that. Since you handled this in your committee, and we haven't actually had an opportunity to do that in this committee, part of this is authorizing a maximum development of 282 residential units to kind of make this work. What is the level of due diligence has been done to say that 282 units in this area is in fact proper, is sustainable, is ecologically sustainable, has no negative impacts? Has all of that research been done to say that the record is clear that this is it would be good to be able to do that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, the 282 are existing home site rights that are already authorized in this forest, and so the real fundamental question of a TDR program, which is what we're talking about, is it better to have them scattered out on a 1 per 240 acre type of deal or clustered in a small place where they could infrastructure could be better tied into existing infrastructure? I know Representative Burley worked really hard on this, did a lot of research to make sure that this project would work. You've got the Central Oregon Land Watch, which is a strong conservation organization who has signed off that this is the better place to place home sites versus spread out all over these forests. So I feel comfortable in that that assessment by the parties involved.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything additional? Seeing none. Thank you, Representative Clem. I will close the public hearing. Do I have a motion? I will open a work session. Do I have a motion on House Bill 228? 2228.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Now, I will again try to move House Bill 2228 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, House Bill 228 has been moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Yes, Senator Metzger.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be supporting moving this to the floor for a very robust discussion on the Senate floor. I personally am not in support of House Bill 2228. I think Mr. Slack properly articulated one key reason, and that is adhering to a land use process that we champion so often, and very disappointed that if for whatever reason some don't like that, then we put an asterisk by it. I remember very, very well in 1999 in my first session of the legislature with the supersiding of a prison in Wilsonville. which went down, I remember, to the last day of the second to the last day of session. It was very contentious over this very same issue, and remember very well some of the discussions on that, opposing that because of maintaining our proper land use situation. So I have great reservations about that. The second reservation is that it's you know, linkage to the upcoming measure, or as Mr. Slack said, what appears to be a version of House Bill 3100, which is in the House but has not moved out of the House, in which the counties also oppose. And this linkage between these two, which is, you know, if you're working on something, we worked on this issue before, and you better take this or we're going to do this one and it's going to, you're going to like it even worse. So I maybe won't use call the way into the word extortion, but it looks like certainly a linkage that isn't proper. So for both of those reasons, I have grave concerns, but I am willing to move this to the Senate floor for that discussion.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Metzger. Okay, we have a motion on the floor to send House Bill 2228 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Are we into the issue of discussion, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, still. Yes.
Thank you.
Senator Ferriola, please proceed.
I concur with my colleague. The sum total of the discussion in this hearing in this committee has been about 17 minutes. This is a sweeping change. I think it sends a strong message to all Oregonians that Oregon's land use system is badly broken, that local decision-making is probably a thing of the past, that counties are not to be trusted, that if outcomes are unsuitable to whomever it is that has the political power to change them, they will be changed. I'm frankly sorry that this bill is moving out of the committee to the Senate floor, where it'll face a partisan treatment. The purposes of the Skyline Forest are excellent. There's no question about that. That was an issue debated and fully supported by counties. The connection between this and transferable development rights only results is an issue, is a series of issues of people being angered or dismayed by outcomes that they could not control in other ways. So that's why we have this linkage. I think it sends a real, sets a real bad precedent, sends a real strong message. So I will vote to support local land use and support the counties. I will vote no on this bill in committee, probably on the floor, even though I realize that that would imperil, in my opinion, the moving forward of Skyline Forest, which was a program that most legislators supported. Transferable development rights is at best an experiment that's failed a couple of times in this legislative assembly. We tried it on forest land many years ago and had to revisit the issue, and it didn't work. I'm not so sure that this can work in this context. But I am sure that centralization of land use planning is the surest way to kill it in the state of Oregon.
Okay. Any additional discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Burnett.
I just want to say that it's because of the linkage that I'm supporting this bill. There is precedent in our land use statutes for declaring areas of critical concern. I think this bill, it may not meet everybody's definition of perfection in a perfect world, but I think it's a fair thing, it's a reasonable thing to do, and the end goal of protecting one of the real treasures of Oregon is a very worthy one, and I think this is a fair and reasonable way to help that happen.
Okay. Well, I support it, but for none of the above reasons. I actually ask that this bill be decoupled. I hate it in this process when things are connected together. I also supported, I'm very interested in getting a foothold, at least, in a state agency that is completely an activist agency that runs over the top of local control, which is the land Conservation and Development Commission, I want to get a foothold in there about cluster development. I think that is a tool that cannot apply without the legislature being involved. And I think it's ironic that we have government lobbying government about a government program. At some point, there's enough government. But I think that the Skyline Forest is very the way that the transaction could work, I think, is interesting, and I would like to see that happen.
Okay. While we're still in discussion, for the record, this bill had three public hearings in the House Committee, Senator Representative Clem's committee, and it did have a hearing also in the Environment and Natural Resources Committee. Close the public hearing, or not close the public hearing, we're still in work session, but that was under discussion. Could the clerk please call the roll?
Senator Atkinson.
Yes.
Senator Burdick.
Aye.
Senator Metzger.
Aye.
Mr.
Ferriero. No.
Senator Devlin.
Aye. Motion passes. Chair will decide at a later date on the carrier. Okay. I am going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3298. Will the committee administrator, I believe the committee administrator to my left, please give an overview of the Dash 11s. The Dash 11s actually replace the entire bill. And so...
that makes me comfortable.
Chair Devlin and committee members, for the record, my name is Beth Herzog, and there is the Dash 11 amendments in front of you, and it replaces the measure, approves Land Conservation and Development Commission recommendation that the Metolius Area of Critical State Concern be designated an area of critical state concern, approves management plan, and requires commission to change its management plan to require the commission to notify the governing bodies of Jefferson County and the Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs Indian Reservation of proposed amendments to its plan, requires the commission to make specified findings by clear and convincing standards in order to adopt such amendments if written objection is made by said governing bodies, prohibits the county from approving siting of a destination resort in the Metolius area of critical state concern, declares an emergency effective on passage. For the record, there's no revenue and a minimal fiscal impact statement issued on the bill, or on the amendment, excuse me.
Okay. Ms. Squires and Mr. Keene, could you please come forward? Please identify yourself and please limit your testimony to 3 minutes. That's not combined, that's each of you.
Appreciate that. Does that include the amendments that I'd like to advance? Mr. Chair, I won't make you answer that question. Choose however you to run your committee. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the record. My name is Hashina Squires. I appear before you today on my behalf of my client, Dutch Pacific Resources, commonly known as the Metolian or the Eco Resort. In 2005, my client purchased a 627-acre piece of property that's located 3.79 miles from the headwaters of the Metolius. Our property is, in fact, one of the two properties that Jefferson County chose to map as destination resort eligible. To date, my client has spent $3.8 million in entitlement legal planning costs to develop what will be Oregon's first eco-resort if it's allowed to move forward. Over the past 12 months of that $3.8 million, $1.5 million has been spent on this project. Our proposed development consists of a project that will be sustainably built. It will provide 100 jobs, living wage jobs, in Jefferson County, which, as you know, is a county that is struggling significantly with its in this economic climate. The county is currently approaching an unemployment rate of nearly 20%, and a quarter of its residents are on food stamps. Our project is not the traditional type of resort. We will not be using groundwater. Our water system will divert surface water, which actually is snow melt, across the middle of our property for 4 months out of the year into three reservoirs. Our project will also provide a natural capital preservation fund that will allow for immediate funding, over $1 million, in restoration and enhancements to the Metolius Basin. We oppose the Dash 11 amendments, I believe we're on, Dash 11 amendments to House Bill 3298, because it will prevent our 600-page development application from proceeding and moving forward. That development application has been prepared and is ready to go for submission to Jefferson County. It is prevented from doing so because the entire mapping process of Jefferson County is on appeal at the Oregon State Supreme Court. but this bill would trump and preempt that. I've got several sets of amendments that I'd like to present to the committee at whatever time you feel is appropriate, Chair Devlin, and would ask for your direction on that.
Okay. If you could briefly address the amendments, that would be appropriate.
Certainly. And my client would like to further sort of, there's a theme, as you'll see, through three of them on the environmental sustainable principles that are in all of them. The Dash 17 amendment would substitute Jefferson County's management plan for the management plan advanced by the Department of Land Conservation and Development. The county's management plan provides what we believe is an if you really want to protect the Metolius River, it will protect the Metolius River. The Dash 14 amendments will basically gut and stuff the bill with the text of Senate Bill 741, A, engrossed as passed out of Senator Dingfelder's committee to the Senate Rules Committee, which provides us with a density level, and then in addition substitutes from the management plan the density level that's contained in the management plan, which is currently 25 and 10 to 50 and 25. The Dash 15 amendment, which I'll turn, so I'll go to the Dash 16 amendment, it'll be easier this way, would adopt the area of critical concern and allow for the eco resort to proceed at its current plan density of 450 units and 180 overnight accommodations. I'll call the Dash 15 amendment in an eco-light version of the Dash 16 amendment, which would allow for our density to be dropped to 210 and 85 units overnight. And then what I'll call eco-super-light Dash 13 amendments, which would allow for our eco-resort to proceed in the sustainable manner that we've been continually striving for and attempting to achieve with all of the standards that all of the other amendments have at 95, the density level of 95 and 45, and Mr. Keene can address all of those sustainable principles in those amendments.
Okay, Mr. Keene.
Chair Devlin, members of the rest of the committee, thanks for the opportunity to speak today. I guess I could term my testimony today as saving our forests one ecotourist at a time. And I'm here not only to represent the Metolia project, but I think it represents the first of what could be a dynamic new industry in our state. So worldwide, the idea of sustainable ecotourism is a blossoming, fastest-growing economic category in travel in the world. And yet, as a state and also as a nation, we've actually not capitalized that. We don't have infrastructure. We're living off of 40 years of investment on trails, cabins, things that our forebears have done. The federal budget, as far as Forest Service, declined 5% this year, and most of that's being devoted to firefighting. So I would say that we need new models for managing our forests, and we need to set the stage for the next 100 years. So the features that we're proposing, and I'm pleased with this session as a side note, that I'd like to say I feel like we've changed the language of sustainability. People use our terms. We're proud of that. People have, I've seen agencies, different bills that incorporate our sustainable concepts. So I think whatever happens here, I'm pleased with my role in bringing forth sustainable ecotourism as well as a new set of standards for destination resorts. As far as our proposal, our standards would require that irrigation must use reclaimed water. In fact, the entire resort focuses on less water use than is average in most resorts and substantially below communities in Oregon. We ban motorized activities as far as recreation. Over 50% of the space has to be open space. It can't have impervious surfaces of more than 35%. And again, I'd say these are all things that no other destination resort in Oregon incorporates right now. We have to have a 20% reduction in potable water usage through technology and just standard built technologies. Use of recycled water is permitted in flushing toilets. I might point out that right now is not permitted statewide. So I think that's another area we could drive change through the building industry. Stormwater has to be managed on-site, and on-site runoff must be limited to pre-development rates. As far as buildings, we have to hit at least 50% of national standards as far as green, LEED standards you may have heard of, the Cascade Building Initiative. All these standards would be throughout our property. Again, it'd be the first community designed from scratch that hits this level of standards. We also would propose spending in two areas. at least a formation of a natural capital fund that would devote $1.5 million to the restoration of the Metolius Basin. If you go on the website of the group dedicated to protect the Metolius Basin, which is Friends of the Metolius, 10 years ago they set up a management plan and a goal for restoring the forest and the basin. They named a number of things that were causing rapid deterioration of the basin. They set a goal of $300,000 raised to combat that. 10 years later, when assessing the success of this plan, they'd raised half of it. To me, that's laudable but not effective. We need different models. From the get-go, we'd have $1.5 million for forest thinning. I might point out a recent fire district meeting in Camp Sherman pointed out that there is no money to go thin the forest, and this could be the worst fire season we've seen in a while. And there's at least three Class 3 fires around the basin, which have potential of B&B fire. We'd also spend $3 million of infrastructure on site, but it wouldn't have a golf course. It'd be devoted to outdoor recreation and similarly low-impact activities. Lastly, I'd say an eco-community should hit these standards. It should develop an operation manual that seeks to attain zero carbon through its waste handling and carbon sequestration policies. It should seek to pioneer zero water standards. It should educate people. It should establish environmental stewardship practices. It should put together a baseline study that says here's the current state of the basin and here's what we're going to do over the next 10 years. Again, proactive planning that doesn't exist right now. So I'd close by saying that I have a history of creating new leading edge industries here in Oregon. I'm the founder of WebMD, and that pioneered internet healthcare, and that changed the healthcare for consumers, for millions of consumers, and right now 20 million people annually use that. I did that because I thought healthcare consumers needed access to information and the current system was broken. I think similarly, our current environmental policies are broken. I can't figure out where the funding model for our forests come from. In fact, I would say that should this bill go through and we kill the sustainable ecotourism business, I would challenge everybody here to come up with a thoughtful policy that figures out a way to put money into the forests and not go back to your houses and pat yourself on the back for a job well done that you, quote, save the forest by limiting access to it, because that doesn't create a funding model. So I would say that by creating a sustainable ecotourism industry, we can give our natural resources a stable funding platform, a fighting chance to return to ecological health. Introducing private-public partnerships will accelerate these stalled restoration efforts. Beneficially, they'll improve access to a public asking for more and introduce new generations to natural settings. They'd be economically significant, providing employment for desperately poor rural communities, as well as driving our world-class outdoor recreation and apparel industries. And lastly, I'd say in the 1960s and 70s, we caught the attention of the world and the nation by developing new standards and new approaches to land use. I'd say we have a similar opportunity to show that we can return local control to our forests and develop new economic funding models that will fill the gap for a rapidly declining federal government. And they will save our forests as well as renew our compact of providing enlightened stewardship to our natural resources. Thank you very much.
Any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Just in terms of timing, was this land in destination, was it mapped for destination resorts when you bought it?
No, it wasn't.
Mr. Chair, to follow up, what was your intent for the land when you actually bought the land?
Well, I have to confess, we were pretty ignorant when we bought the land. I'd always done development inside an urban growth boundary, but I'd never thought about the implications outside, and I thought we could have I had some poor legal advice at the time, and I thought we could do a goal exception, and I didn't know at the time that even though that was on the books, that goal exceptions almost never happen in the Oregon land use system. But my idea was to have some sort of outdoor recreation community that was a base camp on the property, and it would be a cluster of cabins. It would return money back to the forest. I know the area quite well because in 99 when I walked from Mexico to Canada on the Pacific Crest Trail, actually that area struck me as being heavily used, and yet you talk to a lot of rangers, and they're some of the most frustrated people in the world. And so I've been thinking about a lot of these models for years. And then lastly, it's always offended me that I have to hop in my car to drive 2 hours to go find a trailhead.
So basically, Mr. Chairman, the land was in forest use, so as near as you could tell.
It was Gulf War, yes.
When you bought the land, the only use you could have on it was really to engage in forestry. Is that correct?
Chair Devlin, Senator Burdick, yes, that's correct.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess the point of my question is the reason I voted for the previous bill is I think your development model is a very exciting model. And it just, you know, my concern is that in an area as fragile as the Metolius River Basin, when you come in with something of that magnitude, it's of great concern, and it would change the character of the area. I have had up close and personal experience with that area since before I had any memory. I was about 2 years old, and it's just amazing to me how unchanged it's been over the years. And I also sat on the Nature Conservancy Board, and we had a whole campaign around Oregon's last great places, and I consider this area one of Oregon's last great places. But I did vote for the previous bill because I think your model is a very exciting one and one that I would certainly like to support.
Chair Devlin, can I respond to that?
Yes.
Chair Devlin, Senator Burdick, thank you for your comments. We actually are quite proud of the work we've done. I'd respectfully disagree with you about the Metolius Basin being pristine. I actually regularly hike through all the Jefferson Trails back there, and I routinely come back with a bag of garbage. I found a number of trash heaps through there. The damage done by ATVers because there's no funds left to block off the unused roads is significant. That's mentioned on the Friends of the Metolius site. And I could go on, but as far as the forest thing, I mean, I can catalog so many abuses and things that have shown that 80 years hasn't been kind of the 20th century in that area. I think that if you wander around the rural community of Camp Sherman, yes, I'd say that you've had the same experience for 70 or 80 years, but I don't think that reflects the declining health of the basin. And I would suggest that we need to figure out a different thing to do economically to put the basin on a substantial footing. And then lastly, I don't think that banning development, especially if it's thoughtful of this type, is going to solve the problems of that basin. So I do respect your opinion on that, given your history, though. Thank you.
Any additional questions?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Ferriol.
The process for siting this destination resort, the Eco Resort, how long did it take?
Well, we bought the property in 2005, and in 2006, Jefferson County actually started mapping all the lands in the county. It was pretty thorough. It's interesting watching them. Deschutes County actually had a much different approach. They went out and figured out everything that could be mapped as a destination resort and just said, so be it. Jefferson County actually excluded a lot of properties. And we were approached by Jefferson County because they said, we want two high-quality developments. We're going to map only two sites. And you guys have a very good background and reputation as far as your abilities to do this, and would you be willing to go the distance on this? And I don't think anybody could deny we've gone the distance. But we went through that entire year's process. The amount of testimony was staggering, and at the end of that, it was, I thought, very thorough process. It was interesting afterwards to contrast that with the LCDC process, or DLCD process, where in 77 days you had new maps generated. You took existing hydrology data with existing models that existed for a long time and then said, okay, we don't like the answer, so we'll just reconfigure all the data to get the answer we need from the results. The science was poor. It was sloppy. We had presentations where Lake Billy Chinook was listed as being 20 miles away, and that was presented as the official map. So I kind of laugh when I hear the people say about how thorough this was, because I know how hard it is to do an existing process that's existed since 1986 for mapping destination resorts and hear that trashed as far as the county's process, and yet hear all the accolades thrown on the agency for 77 days of just incredibly difficult process to do. I don't even see how anybody could do that correctly.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Was the county process a public process?
It was.
And it took approximately 3 years?
No, they mapped at the beginning of 2006, and then they did the noticing and had their results by the end of 2006. That's fairly typical from what I understand.
And the decision?
The decision was to map our our site and the Colson site.
Okay. Were the decisions appealed?
Yes. Actually, it's interesting. The first, immediately they're appealed. We had the one of the most one-sided LUBA decisions in history handed down, 53 pages rebutting, I'd say, 95% of the claims of the plaintiffs. And actually, it's interesting. We were ready to submit our application in December of 2008. And mysteriously, the Supreme Court took it up, and none of us could figure out why that happened, because the only two issues left that were outstanding were, did Jefferson County count wildlife migration patterns correctly next to the Colson property? We are nowhere near a mapped wildlife zone. And the second, whether they should have considered groundwater as a resource, a Goal 5 resource, which is interesting because they're actually precluded by state statute from considering groundwater as a Goal 5 resource. So we thought it was kind of interesting. And then lastly, we couldn't understand why the Supreme Court took up an issue that has local implications. We've always thought that they're supposed to look at things that have statewide implications. So it seemed kind of interesting that 2 weeks later we had Director Whitman come and tell us that here's what's going to happen. You're going to lose your property. And I know we met with you last June and said we're going to take statewide looks, but, you know, sorry, we had changed our mind. And
follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
And what was the decision from the Supreme Court?
Decision has been rescinded, the decision is actually pending, and so we expect that this summer. And regardless of how that decision comes back, it's not going to affect us because it relates to the Colson property, so we consider ourselves, you know, pretty much mapped. Because it doesn't matter if it comes back as a Goal 5 resource of groundwater, because we're using surface water capture, so we're outside of that. And then secondly, we're not next to any mapped wildlife ranges, so we're in a holding pattern just waiting to submit our application that's been done since last year.
Mr. Chairman, the point of that question was just to underscore the fact that there's a pending decision on this issue, and the legislature is apparently willing to step into an issue while there is a pending court case. Mr. Chairman, it's quite apparent that the action contemplated by this committee, if it's approved by the legislature, will have a negative effect on the value of the property. I'd like the panel to comment on any estimate of value decline that they may have or may be aware of.
It depends on if you say that by stepping into an existing process, then downzoning us to two lots, which is interesting. I hear the argument, well, you're getting what you originally had. Well, actually, no, land always transforms itself through its value of its entitlements. And we were part of an official statewide or a land statute as far as mapping our property. And the only reason why we're not just proceeding down the path of waiting for the Oregon Land Use System to spit out its conclusion is that we had outside interference that's unprecedented.
Yes, Senator Metzger.
Yeah, thank you. Either one of you might be able to address this. I just want to make clear when you talk about the Supreme Court issue that's before them that apparently the two issues are unrelated to your property.
Yes.
Are you telling me that then the fact that that is in the Supreme Court has no impact on your application or your status, put it that way, or not? Because it sounds like you said something about an application, and it sounds like you may have been stalled on some part of your process because of something that may not affect you. Did I read that wrong or not?
No, that's more or less the correct interpretation of that. I'm sorry, I keep forgetting to use the honorifics, Chair Devlin and Senator Mester.
Right, it all works.
Okay, thank you. In effect, the two issues outstanding are that you have, there's a claim that Jefferson County did not consider winter range for deer and elk correctly, and they have that mapped in the county. And we're nowhere near that because we're right on the highway. And
no, I understand it. I'm sorry, I didn't make myself clear. Is the fact that were there any processes that you were not able to complete as a result of this now before the court, even though they were unrelated to you, that any of this legislation may trump is what I guess I'm asking.
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, yes. We are unable to file our application with Jefferson County, our 600-page development application, until the Supreme Court rules.
I see.
Senator Atkinson.
Thank you.
Before you start, Senator Atkinson, just for the sake of, I know there are people here waiting for other bills. It's the intent of the chair to basically, because I know how long this may go on, to basically carry over 776 and 783 till tomorrow. I apologize to the people that came here for those bills, but it's, but this meeting will have to come to a conclusion within a certain period of time, and I can see from the clock right now that we will not be able to get to those bills, and it would be, I'd hope that we would be able to get to those bills, but as long as this discussion is going, we probably will not. So I'm going to carry those over till tomorrow. They will be at the head of the agenda, and I will actually say we will stay here till we conclude the work on this bill. Please proceed, sir.
Thank you. Under current law, and under current zoning, do you have the ability to moonscape this property, cut down every tree, till up every piece of dirt? Can you do that?
Well, it'd be moot anyway because it was savagely clear cut by Willamette for 40 straight years before he bought it. So,
can you till the land?
Legally, we could, I guess, and try to rebuild it, but I don't see the utility.
Mr. Chair, Senator Atkinson, nothing in this legislation would prevent the Colsons from clear-cutting their entire property.
Another couple questions, Mr. Chair. The reason I asked that particular question is that's actually what's faced all over Oregon when someone tries to do something unique. The two things that they come up against, one is an activist agency, and the second thing they come up against is bogus wildlife maps that were invented by the legislature in 1982 that have no basis in science or certainly aren't relevant today. Has the agency given you any course of recouping your costs? Have they mentioned that in any memo or email to you? Or is it just, oops, sorry, we changed our mind?
Mr. Chair, Senator Atkinson, I don't believe DLCD has any authority to offer us any funding to recoup our
They're
costs.
An activist agency. They just make it up as they go along if they feel like it. And I mean, that's the point. I didn't ask if they had any authority. I asked if they've done that. Have they provided you any remedy for as much money as you're out?
Mr. Chair, Senator Atkinson, I would say that the agency has attempted to work with Jefferson County, the Colsons, and they've reached an agreement with the Colsons. The Colson property is perfectly satisfied with the provisions contained in the Dash 11 amendments, to the best of my ability or best of my knowledge. Notwithstanding the fact that they've attempted to try to assuage our opposition, there has been absolutely nothing that the agency has been able to provide us with via guarantee orally or in statute that would dissuade our opposition.
So you're into this $4 million so far in fees, is that right? Is that what
approximately, yes. But that includes acquisition and then just what we've invested at thereafter.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Anything additional?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Farrelly.
Has anybody discussed the possibility if the legislature takes action on what is in substance Senate Bill 741, a Measure 49 claim?
Mr. Chair, Senator Farrelly, it's been our position that Measure 49 is the least of our worries and our issues about potential ability to litigate over this issue. We've been very focused on trying to provide some sort of sustainable options and alternatives to the legislation that's been advanced. I think that's why you'll see four or five amendments in front of you today that we are attempting to continue to push to build our existing project in some form or fashion because we believe it's the right place to do it, it's the right time to do it, and it's the right thing to do.
Mr. Chairman.
Anything else?
Yes. I don't know that it involves this panel, but under the issue of discussion.
Yes.
And if there are any other witnesses, perhaps you want to bring them forward.
Yes, we have two more witnesses.
Okay, and Mr. Chairman, if I might, I'd like to distribute this to the committee. It is a fiscal statement, or actually it's a legal opinion that indicates that that Senate Bill 40 or 741, contemplated action by the committee would include into the measure, is in fact a takings, is in fact a Measure 49 concern, would in fact trigger a Measure 49 claim for compensation, does in fact require us to consider the Measure 49 implications. And Mr. Chairman, our rule, Senate Rule 8.50-4, Senate Committee Rule 18 states no measure shall be reported out of committee unless written legislative council amendments and any fiscal and or revenue impact statements have been distributed and reviewed by the committee. Mr. Chairman, the legislative review distributed with this bill is fraudulent, or at least inaccurate. R.L. Allen Group has produced what they believe is a reasonable estimate of the fiscal impact of this contemplated action on the owners. Under the current development rights, at least for the Ponderosa Land and Cattle Company, they dropped from 93 to 156 million, a range of 93 to 156, to a range of 20 to 32 million. Mr. Chairman, there is a clear fiscal implication, far greater than minimal. There is a legislative opinion that substantiates that it is far greater than minimal, that is in fact a Measure 49 claim. And Mr. Chairman, I hope that before you contemplate the movement of any amendments to this bill, that an accurate fiscal is produced for the committee as is required by our rules. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any additional questions? Thank you both for coming.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, may I have those fiscal impacts and opinions of value distributed to the committee members and members of the public who wish to have them?
Okay. Can be done. I'm going to call up Arch Slack. Please proceed.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, my name is Art Slack. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. And I'm here today to speak to the Dash 11 amendments that you have before you to House Bill 3298. I would note that those amendments are the exact same amendments that were proposed to House Bill 3100. The Dash 23 amendments. These having to do then again with the Metolius area of critical concern. As I indicated with regard to the previous bill, the Association of Oregon Counties does not support the Dash 11 amendments to House Bill 3298. We believe that the Metolius River and the basin is a special place in Oregon. However, we find that the process employed by the Land Conservation and Development to recommend this area to be designated as an area of a statewide critical concern to be lacking. The process used by the commission was fast-tracked in an effort to present recommendations to this body during the 2009 legislative session. And as a result of this concentrated time frame,
The process was, there was limited communication and coordination with affected local governments, stakeholders, and the public. As I indicated, if a county was to undertake a planning exercise of this magnitude, it would take a year or more of intense work and working with the public, holding meetings, working with landowners, holding public hearings before planning commissions and also the elected county officials at this point. And we acknowledge that the there is a process for the identification and the development of a plan for areas of statewide concern. However, we believe that in this case, the process that was used by LCDC in undertaking this was not a good process and one that provided a good result. And therefore, we do not support the Dash 11 amendments to this House bill. Thank you very much.
Any questions?
Mr. Chairman, is there, can you name another area of statewide special concern in Oregon?
Mr. Chair, Senator Farioli, to my knowledge, this would be the first area that would be identified. There has been some discussed previously in previous years, but an actual designation has not been presented itself to an area in the state.
Mr. Chairman, just to establish, there is no precedent for the action that's contemplated by this bill.
Mr.
Yes, Senator Metzger.
Mr. Slack, help me a little bit on the Dash 11, which you say was incorporated in 3100 on the House side, correct? Essentially, was a different Dash 23 or something, but
yes.
It's the same language, right? Can you tell me, with the Dash A11, how it differentiates from Senate Bill 741?
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, I have to indicate that I have not looked at this amendment with regard to Senate Bill 741 at this point.
Okay, and I understand. I didn't have it either, so I didn't bring it down. So, okay, thank you.
Okay. Any additional questions? Seeing none, thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you, sir.
The last party signed up to testify is, I believe it's Eric. Is it Kankler?
It's Kanzler.
Kanzler. Okay. Please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Chair Devlin, committee members, thank you for this opportunity to speak. My name is Eric Kanzler, and I'm the executive director of Central Oregon Land Watch, and I'll, in the interest of time, keep this brief and simply express my organization's support for House Bill 3298, the Dash 11 amendments. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Kanzler? Seeing none, thank you very much. Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing. And I'm going to recess the committee for 7 minutes till 5:15.
Ready?
5:25.
5:25, but it's with 5:45.
reconvene the committee. Before, we had just completed the public hearing on House Bill 3298. It is the intention of the chair at this time to entertain only the Dash 11 amendments. Is there a motion on the Dash 11 amendments?
Mr. Chairman, I would like to move the Dash A 17 amendments.
Okay. The chair does not recognize the motion.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to move the Dash A 13 amendments.
The chair does not recognize the motion.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to move the Dash A 15 amendments.
The chair does not recognize the motion.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to move the A 16 amendments.
The chair does not recognize the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I thought this was a bipartisan session.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Burton.
I would like to move the Dash A 11 amendments.
Mr. Chairman, point of order.
Point of order.
Mr. Chairman, we have a legal counsel opinion dated April 28th that I'd like to read parts of into the record.
Okay. Senator Farioli, I will oblige you, but I would like to do that after the bill is actually the bill it is supposed to be after the Dash 11 amendment.
Now, Mr. Chairman, if we adopt the motion...
We have not adopted the bill at that time.
If we adopt the motion, we'll be taking a step toward violating legal counsel's opinion about the efficacy of this bill and the lack of a fiscal analysis.
Okay.
But, Mr. Chairman, if you wish to do the amendment, I'm trying to prevent you from doing the amendment, Mr. Chairman, because I think that's in your best interest. But.
Okay. The preference of the chair at this point would be to do the amendment, and then I would entertain your discussion.
As you wish, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Actually, I will attempt to entertain it before we actually vote on the amendment. I just want to get the amendment before us.
Yes, Mr.
So,
Chair.
We have an amendment before us to adopt the Dash A11 amendments. Is there any discussion? Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I have entered into the record a legal opinion. I'd just like to quote very briefly a couple of paragraphs. Mr. Chairman, on April 2nd, 2009, the Land Conservation and Development Commission recommended a proposed management plan to the Legislative Assembly. And this is the legal counsel speaking. We assume that you are aware of the proposed management plan and are asking about the potential ballot measure 49 implications if the Legislative Assembly approved the plan as a management tool for the Metolius area of critical concern. We conclude that the management plan, if given effective legal status by the Legislative Assembly, is a potential legal basis for ballot measure 49 claims for just compensation. The management plan explicitly states that it does not eliminate statutory claims for owners who may or may not have claims under measure 49. Explicit prohibitions in management plan include any new destination resort as defined by statewide planning goal 8, recreation, ORS 197.435 to 197.467, any new residential development exceeding 10 dwelling units on a tract, regardless of whether an exception is taken, except as provided in Section 1.2 below. Under the time constraints of our request, we have not reviewed the management plan implemented by SB 741 closely. However, these provisions alone create a potential legal basis for some property owners in the area of critical state concern to claim just compensation under ORS 195.305 and 195.310. The management plan may contain additional restrictions on the residential use of property or on farming or forest practice. Another point of order. We are required by Senate Rule 18 to have a fiscal analysis of legislative measures. It's required pursuant to Senate Rule 8.50, sub 4, and Model Senate Committee Rule 18, which states that no measure shall be reported out of a committee unless a written legislative council amendments, and any fiscal and or revenue impact statements have been distributed and reviewed by the committee. This provision applies to all measures reported to the floor for action or measures with subsequent referral to committees on finance or revenue and or ways and means. Mr. Chairman, in view of the legal counsel's clear indication that this would create a Measure 47 claim, I will assert that the fiscal impact statement of minimal fiscal impact statement is erroneous and invalid. So, Mr. Chairman, I would urge you to not move forward with the amendment in the face of Legal counsel's advice that it will create Measure 49 claims, and in the face of the fact that it would violate Senate Rule 8.50 and Senate Committee Rule 18 if we do not have an adequate fiscal that discloses the cost of the Measure 49 claims to this committee.
Thank you very much, Senator Ferrioli. It is the position of the chair that we do have a fiscal statement and a revenue statement for the Dash 11. That I do understand that you put in front of us an opinion that you requested from legislative counsel. I understand that they are saying that there is a potential of a claim there. I also understand that this issue has been put before the Attorney General, and there's another question there that they believe there is no claim there.
Mr. Chairman, since you brought the Attorney General's opinion into the committee consideration, I'd like to have a copy of the opinion.
There is no written opinion that I know of. I've just been advised that that's what has been the advice to one of the chairs of the respective committee.
Mr. Chairman, in view of the fact that we have a written opinion from legislative counsel and only a rumor of an opinion from the State Attorney General, I would suggest that we do need to have an adequate fiscal,
okay.
And we do need to acknowledge that.
Senator Ferrioli, I understand your request. It is the position of the chair that I am accepting the fiscal that we currently have in the revenue statement that we currently
have. Mr. Chairman,
can
I ask for that fiscal to be read into the record?
The fiscal that we have?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Could the committee administrator read the fiscal, which I believe is minimal?
Chair Devlin and committee members, it's a minimal fiscal impact. There's no statement issued.
Okay. We do have a motion on the floor. Is there any additional discussion? Yes, Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a, you know, very contentious issue going back to 2007, which I sat through extensive discussion on this issue when it was Senate Bill 30 in the Senate Education General Government Committee. It's been going on for a while, and it has a lot of people with very good-hearted intentions with it, and very empathetic with that. In fact, was a supporter of Senate Bill 30 at the time, until at the end of that session, you may remember, Mr. Chair, both through the inaction of the legislature and the action of the executive branch, it was decided to go forward with our land use process. So now it's back and looking at that differently. The Dash 11 amendment, I understand, will be moving forward. We have other amendments that have been offered that essentially do the same thing other than the different densities, and none of which I would actually be very thrilled about, but they at least represent other choices and still accomplish the same goal. So one wonders, what is the goal and what has been dictated into what is a proper density when it gets to protection? You know, we use the word protect. We use the word reform. Because somehow they carry some weight that the language that follows that has no meaning, because everybody wants to reform, everyone wants to protect. But what is the right protection? Is 2,500 units enough not to protect, which is the other proposal which has now been settled? Is it 1,000? Is it 500? Is it 50? Is it 25, as would be reflected in the Dash 11 amendment? I sense the the memory of William Jennings Bryan and Clarence Darrow and Inherit the Wind, when Clarence Darrow on the stand and talked about forming the heavens and the earth in 6 days, and what was a day? Was it a 24-hour day? To God, is a day a million days to us? What is density? What is right? What special does what tells us that protection is 25, or that 100 is not protection, or 450 is not protection when properly done? And so I'm disappointed, Mr. Chair, that at least that we wouldn't have, if we're going to say we're going to protect, and I think the values of this committee, this legislature, certainly me, want to do that, what does that actually mean and on what basis? I'm just disappointed we haven't been able to do that. And when people went forward with good intentions and with the direction of essentially the legislature and the executive branch after 2007, I'll support that amendment, but I think this could have had a much more fair and balanced discussion of what protection actually would have meant.
Thank you, Senator Metzger.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Atkinson.
A few comments. Seeing that I sat through years of this and also was on the policy committee of which this bill originated from, I think that the Dash 11 amendments are an embarrassment. I think they're an embarrassment to the Oregon State Senate. I think they're an embarrassment to the process. When we first heard this bill in the other policy committee, we had three county commissioners come up, three county commissioners who live in Jefferson County, who campaigned in Jefferson County to work for the citizens of Jefferson County that are trying to balance all of the issues of Jefferson County. And they followed the exact process that was laid out by this body through a state agency to do. And they did it. And they did a very good job. And then it was decided from an activist agency and by the executive here that they didn't like what the local community decided, so they trumped them. The Dash 11 amendments is nothing more than a codifying a cheap shot that state agency is doing to a county government. Now, we can all, I've never heard one person, even though it's environmental debate and it's R's and D's and it's environmentalists against everybody else and all that and all the little pigeonholing that we like to do, but I've never heard of anybody on either side of this debate that did not want to protect the Metolius River. That's just for campaign fodder. That's all that is. That's just so some environmental groups can raise money off of a panic. But there is no ability in the Dash 11s to actually bring people together, whether or not it's compensation, which we know that this has to have, whether or not there's $4 million spent in good faith that just is getting thrown out of the water from the elites in state government and an activist agency, or there is absolutely no recourse for somebody who, on good faith, did the right thing and had their head handed to them. This sends a chilling message to, even though I disagree with the whole contents of sending messages, this tells all 36 counties and all the county commissioners in the state that don't follow the rules, don't even play by the rules, because Salem's going to tell you what the rules are when they figure out what they want the rules to be. I think that's very sad. I don't think we ever even got to the Metolius. I don't think we ever got to the fact that this state has no wildlife maps. I don't think we ever got to the fact that the whole thing could burn down. We never got, those are the important things that actually are involved in conservation. We settled around silly things that this process does that absolutely make this Dash 11 an embarrassment.
Anything additional? Seeing none, we'll call the roll.
Senator Eckert?
No. Yes.
Senator Metzger?
Aye.
Mr. Ferriero?
No.
Chair Devlin?
Aye. Motion passes. Do we have a main motion to move the bill as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move House Bill 3298 to the Senate as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, the Senate bill?
House bill.
Or House Bill 228B as amended has been moved, or 3298 as amended has been moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any additional discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Senator Burdick.
In an abundance of caution, I will declare a potential conflict of interest because my family has a cabin on the Metolius River. I'm not personally an owner of it right now, but in an abundance of caution, I will declare a potential conflict.
Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'll be voting no on the measure, on the motion before the committee, because in point of fact, it suspends the rule of law for land use planning in Jefferson County. In point of fact, it establishes a centralized planning county based on who is in political power at the moment. It creates a tremendous precedent. And Mr. Chairman, if you paid attention to the opinion of our legal counsel, which I believe we're bound to follow, it creates a tremendous fiscal liability, which has not been adequately disclosed to the public nor to this committee. And because I believe that the fiscal is substantial, Mr. Chairman, I would maintain that this action violates our committee rules, and it also violates Senate rules.
Well, Senator Farioli, you know that I respect that everyone on this committee has a right to their opinion.
Yes, sir.
And everyone has a right to disagree, if they do disagree.
Senator Devlin.
Can you call the roll? Senator Metzger.
Just one final comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the reasons I have previously articulated, I'm very, very concerned about this and the precedent that it sets. Again, as Senator Atkinson pointed out, I don't think anyone doubts the desire to protect the Metolius, but it's defining what that actually is. And I'll support this motion in the committee. I'll reserve the right to vote no on the floor, but I do believe this is a discussion, another robust discussion that the Oregon Senate should have in public. So I will support the motion.
Thank you, Senator Metzger. Please call the roll.
Senator Atkinson?
No.
Senator Byrd?
Aye.
Senator Metzger?
Aye.
Mr.
Ferriola?
No.
Chair Devlin?
Aye. Motion passes. Chair will decide at a later time who the carrier will be.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to
take
the opportunity to notify the chair of our intent to file a minority report.
Thank you very much, Senator Ferriola.
And, Mr. Chairman, I will say that as passionate as some of these issues are and as difficult as some of these issues are, I appreciate the courtesy with which you handled the hearing and treated the witnesses. That has not always been true in Senate committees. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. With that, we are adjourned. We have a very full agenda tomorrow, and for the sake of the committee to know that their schedule in advance, rules will be meeting at 1 o'clock on Friday. I'm trying to get you out of here.
Good job.
Fine, Mr. Chairman.